press record, and that's it.
Okay.
Go on. Now you, everybody's. I'm not going to say a word. There's no agenda. Just who are you? Where are you? What are you doing? Why are you? What are you here? Whatever, anything.
Oh gosh.
Well, I'm Lynn. I'm from the Arch Project. We are at the Depot Bakery. I'm with Erica and Tony.
Chris.
I don't know where I've got Tony from. I've made that up. Nice to meet you, Chris. Nice to meet you, Erica. Never met these two lovely people before.
I think networking is such a vital thing for everybody, not just for businesses and charities, but for people on the street, people in their homes, and talking and doing that face-to-face communication is really, really important. And so both sort of like emotionally and mentally, and you know, it's having that conversation that really keeps us all human.
Yeah, I think like you say, networking just puts a business spin on just connections, doesn't it, really?
Yeah.
On building those friendships and connections with people. I just think networking's just a bit of a spin on it, really, isn't it?
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, my background's actually in community development, and certainly one of the things I've observed over the years is how vital it is, if you're going to have any sense of community at all, to have what I call unstructured meeting places.
Mm.
So, like, we've been to the Depot Bakery today, and it's a space in which conversations can take place over a cup of coffee. And the coffee shops are doing that job to some degree, but there are parts of the city where there aren't any.
Yeah.
And there aren't any spaces where people can meet.
Yeah, I think, like you say, it's a dying art in some ways, and it's nice to see it being regenerated, isn't it? Some people have noticed that, because, you know, I always hark back to when I was younger. Community was just so vital, wasn't it? Everybody knew everyone on the street. You know, all the children looked after each other. Mm. You know, and I remember as I got older, I had to actually be in the house earlier rather than kind of later, because that community spirit, I think, was already kind of fading away, if that makes sense. I think we went through a period that it was almost, you know, you go to work, you come in, you get in your house, and that's it.
Yeah.
And I actually quite miss that. And you know, some may call it nosy neighbour, and there are some nosy neighbours out there. But others just want that, I think, that sense of community back, really.
Yeah.
And I think it's a bit of a dying art in a sad way.
And I think it, you know, the loneliness and isolation thing about, that's the thing about communities are now lost, and you've got so many older people on your street who we don't know are even there. And that's really sad. Years ago, you would have known everybody on your street.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, you just about know your neighbours either side just to say hello to, and that's it.
Yeah.
And that's a really sad loss, and I think we need to revert back to that. The Minister of Loneliness, you know, the government have realised that there is this epidemic, and they've brought in this Minister of Loneliness.
And is there a Minister of Loneliness?
Yeah.
A fairly isolated minister who's very lonely.
Totally. And, you know, it's not just the government's job, it's everybody's job to go and talk to somebody and to be there and see, do you want any shopping doing? Or, you know, we can't just leave it to the government to do it. Everybody has to do it.
But we need those public spaces.
Mm.
You know, it's not just about people having good intentions. Mm. If there aren't the spaces where people can encounter one another, and people's houses are private spaces, so they can invite you in, but a lonely person is probably less likely to do the inviting.
Yeah.
So it's how do we create spaces where people can actually find one another?
Yeah, I think, like you said, more people, thankfully, are becoming aware of that, aren't they? More businesses are as well. I think coffee shops particularly. I can't remember where it is now, but I know there's somewhere in Sheffield that does a board game evening in their coffee shop. And I think that's great, because, again, if you are a person on your own, you know you can still go along and play a board game with someone, because everyone's there for the same reason. And I think, you know, it's that ease, because that's what we do actually as well in our project. It's really easy, isn't it, to have a chat over a cup of tea whilst you're playing Scrabble or Connect Four or whatever your thing is, than it is to just kind of sit there and say, right, what's your name, where are you from, da-da-da-da-da. It's that relaxed environment you need, isn't it, that kind of opens those conversations.
And when they now have chatty tables in coffee shops where they have a sign on the table that says sit here if you want to chat, so that almost invites people to actually speak to each other.
It's that innovation and intention, you know, having that intention of creating community. And one thing I found out recently was the origin of the public house,
right?
And it actually was literally that, because you were saying, Erica, earlier that, you know, lots of people live in homes that are not very comfortable and quite alienating to live in. Well, that was true for a lot of people in the past. So the public house was a well-furnished house that anyone, well, if you were a man, obviously, because
of
only
course.
Men
there.
but men could go there and sit in comfort and talk. There was no alcohol to begin with. The alcohol came along later.
I didn't realise that.
But it was literally a public house.
That's interesting, isn't it?
And it's nice now that actually pubs are now being used in the mornings and things like that, when there's not so many people around, for communities to get together. Mm. So I can't remember any specific ones, but they have coffee mornings, gatherings or lunches for people just to come in who are feeling lonely and just sit and chat. And so these houses, these public houses, are not just being used for social interaction with beer and, you know, darts and pub quizzes. They're actually being used for the community as well during the day, which I think is a fantastic resource there.
Yeah, because I think, like you say, it's important as well to remember that, of course, social isolation really does affect older people, but it actually really affects a lot of younger people, a lot of young mums. I think there's a lot of stats out there now that say young mums are more and more turning to alcohol, for example, because they feel so isolated and so kind of under the cosh of being a young mum that it's kind of the out as such. So as you say, I think it's really important to understand that, you know, it affects all ages,
everybody,
from all kind of sexes, kind of thing.
Because
I think you do, I think when you mention loneliness, I do think, certainly for me, your first thought is an older person, isn't it, who may be on their own, or even an older couple who, like you say, have lost all the family. But actually, it really can affect everyone and anyone.
And I suppose, Lynn, from the Cathedral Project point of view, homeless people also feel very isolated.
Absolutely.
And lonely.
Yeah.
Because they don't have anybody to talk to, really.
No, like you say, you will see a lot in gangs and groups, so to speak, and so you'll assume that there's a friendship group. But for the most part, it's just because they'll only speak to each other, because a lot of general public will walk past them, will ignore them. And it's like anything, like we were talking about earlier, it's your comfort blanket. To a degree, they actually know them people, they know what's expected of them, and what that, you know, vice versa. And like us all, we like our comfort blanket, don't we? But as you say, there is a lot of this population that actually wouldn't speak to them or wouldn't befriend them because of that kind of misunderstanding, or I think anyway.
Or lack of knowledge and understanding.
Absolutely.
Like
education,
you say.
And not understanding that person or why they may be in the situation that they're in, I think, you know, because you do see, I suppose, the more difficult side of homelessness, because, you know, they may be street drinking, they may have taken something they shouldn't have done, they may have left the rubbish on the pavement. But of course, that's not the be all and end all of homelessness. There is way, way more than that. And social kind of isolation is one of those huge things, really.
And I think with you, Chris, telling stories to your neighbours, to your friends, sitting in, say, the Depot Bakery, and we've heard some very personal stories this morning, it gets that image across, doesn't it? It helps us to feel the emotion, to all those kind of things, and that's what being human is all about, isn't it? Sharing those stories and the emotion.
Yes, we've sort of outsourced storytelling to the media. So, you know, most of us get our stories from television, radio, online, and so we tend to lose the sense of storytelling as being something intimate, you know, it's between a few people. And, you know, in most religious traditions put a lot of emphasis on hospitality, and I think it's interesting that when we think about hospitality, we think about the role of the host, because the host has responsibilities, you know, not to kill their guests and to feed them and things like that. But actually, I do think there was a role for the guest as well, because the guest was bringing new stories, new ideas, news, and their role was to share that. And that's why, in a way, that, you know, there was a reciprocity in it.
Social interaction again, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's nothing better than face-to-face conversation. Oh, you just cannot.
I hate the way
it.
We're moving. Everything's done kind of online,
Skype.
On the phone, whatever. Yeah. I'm a good old-fashioned face-to-face girl.
I don't think it will ever.
You can beat it. Those facial expressions, that feeling that you get, that connection that you get. For me, and I just don't think you can beat it.
No. I agree.
But you'll have been to meetings where everybody sits around the table and get the phone out and start scrolling through things, and you're thinking, well, yeah.
It's really tricky for me, because I'm the marketing and communications person at my charity, so I have to tweet about what you do.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a bit awkward. You're like, excuse me, I'm just tweeting, and you feel a bit rude to stand there with your phone and do that. But it is part of my job to do that, so it's kind of really having
just
that balance.
Balancing act, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I did notice that about you earlier, actually. You apologised to me. You said, oh, I'm sorry, I'm just trying to...
Yeah.
So I did notice, actually, that you're aware of doing that.
Yeah.
Like you say. But I hate it if you're in mid-conversation with someone and they pick up, the mobile rings. I've got a friend who I've known nearly 30 years, and we can be in the middle of any conversation, whether it's a deep conversation or whether it's just a whatever, and if her phone rings, she will pick it up. I just don't get it.
No.
You know, if mine rings, I'd press it to switch it off and make a mental note to ring that person back.
Yeah.
But it's
a deep motivation. I mean, I can remember when I was a kid, we had a landline, and whenever the phone rang, it was a scramble. You know, everybody was racing to pick the phone up and see. And there is that compulsion to lift the, to lift the receiver. And I think that's part of the, you've got a mobile phone, you hear it ring.
Yeah.
It's an impulse, isn't
it?
Yeah,
and
it's hard to break that.
We're all sitting there on our phones looking down when we're on the tram or on the bus, whereas years ago we would have been talking to the person next to us and just having that conversation.
Or reading the newspaper.
Yeah.
Having your quiet time.
Yeah, well, I think, there's a paradox. We live in cities, where hundreds, thousands of people are all together, and yet so many people are lonely. That's one side of the paradox. But the other side of it is that it's actually sometimes very difficult to find solitude in the city.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you actually want to be on your own and you want peace and quiet,
yeah,
because that is a human need as well.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see how people find the spaces for that. For example, if you walk along the canal, you see men fishing. They'll be sat there. I'm not 100% convinced there are any fish in the canal, but it's a reason to sit quietly. I'm sure in a lot of homes there's a domestic arrangement so that spaces are allocated to the partners, so that they don't have to get under one another's feet. I'm sure that's very common. And people think, are they really getting on? Is this a successful relationship? But, it's a human need to have quiet in their life as well.
Mm.
And it's sort of balancing all these things. And we don't think about them.
Yeah.
So that's why we don't get it right.
Mm. Yeah, because interestingly, my hubby's just started fishing. I don't know whether it's because he needs more space or just more space from me.
it could be a well-being thing. It is.
Oh, it is, absolutely. But yeah, it does him the world of good. And whether he catches fish or not, is like you say, it's kind of irrelevant, really.
Mm.
It's just the fact that he's gone, he's had some fresh air, he's enjoyed his time, whatever that time is in his head.
Mm.
And he comes back, quite a happy bunny kind of thing.
Mm.
And
yeah,
like I say, I think it's just finding whatever that is.
Yes.
For you, isn't it? As
yeah.
a person, it won't suit me,
mm.
but it clearly does him.
Mm.
But I think, like you say, it's finding that, because it's difficult to find it sometimes, actually. Because I'm a person that if I've got, for example, an hour spare, I've got to fill it. I never think for a second, oh, Lynn, just sit down and pick up a book, actually. You've got an hour off. I just think, oh, what can I do? Who can I see? And it's my hubby, actually, who says, I've noticed this about you recently. He says, why don't you just do nothing? I'm like, how do you do nothing?
Yeah.
So I think it's finding it within yourself, actually, as well, sometimes, that, you know, taking that time out and finding how you do that, because I'm just a person who goes, you know, it's constantly on the go.
I don't like being alone. I love being around people. It makes me happy, and to be alone, it just horrifies me. I just don't want to be ever be in that situation. So for me to know that there are 270 million people out there who feel lonely is just horrific to think that. You know, it's really sad.
It's different. I mean, people have different needs, but also in their lives, you know, at times they need company and at times they need solitude. It's working out you know,
balance.
What you need at you know, at this time is, and if you can't do that, you can't really articulate your needs. You know, so it becomes harder to actually find what you're looking for.
Good. Now I'm you're doing pretty good. 16 minutes that was. Time out. No, so you just sit there and just do what you. It's. The conversation, just what it comes out.
And it's nice because we don't know each other, so it's nice to sort of talk about views to people that you don't know, isn't it?
I found it easy once we'd started. I think that flow, I found it easier than it became quite natural, actually. I could sit, you know, go back in there with a cuppa and then quite happily sit and have a chat, which is quite nice, actually.
But you there'll be some bits in this I deliberately don't say anything, but it just they will resonate with people. There was a couple of things that went past, but when you listen back, think, a bit like what you were saying. I mean, they're just that I can't spend an hour.
That's
kind of a bit of an eye opener.
I didn't notice until my hubby said, "Why do you do that?" I said, "Do what?" He said, you know, for instance, if he's working one evening, the first thing I will do is, I don't think, oh, I don't need to cook tea and, you know, I don't need to do whatever. The first thing I'll do is I'll think, right, what else can I do instead of, you know, I don't ever think, oh, I'll just sit and watch TV or read a book. But like you say, I didn't notice that in myself. I have done now, and now I have to really consciously, though, it nearly kills me to sit and I'm like,
you've just done it for nearly 20 minutes.
Yeah, but it hadn't been a complete relax for me, actually.
Oh, right.
You're doing
it. You find it stressful?
Mission.
No, I think you're still
aware that I'm looking at that.
Oh, sorry. I think you're still aware you're on the clock. I'm being paid to be here. So I'm always, because I'm being paid, I'm working. And so that's not a complete relax for me, because I know I'm being paid and I'm working.
Yeah.
So it's not a complete switch off. Does that make sense?
Kind of, yeah. But I mean, but part of the work, don't you find it relaxing? I mean, you work. Do you have to work?
Relaxing? Yeah. No, I don't have to work.
Right, so, you know,
But no, it's not, I can't say relaxing is the right word.
No.
I think it's good for me, but I don't think it's relaxing.
Okay.
But I think it's good for me. Because and like you, I think you're very passionate, clearly, about what you do, which is great.
Thank you.
And that's the same for me, that because I think that passion kind of drives you to do the job that you do. So I think that goes with that. I wouldn't relax because I'd always want to do the right thing by my charity, if that makes sense. So you've always got that little cog in the back of your mind that you kind of, that you are coming across in the right way. You know, get me on a Friday night when I'm not on the clock and I might have had a few gin and tonics, then that's a relaxing conversation.
Okay.
But you don't tell us you're recording it, that's the thing.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say it's stressful, but it's not relaxing either.
No.
That's
the middle ground, isn't it?
Right, well, I'm time-wise.
Fab.
You guys, you know, we'll watch bits and pieces too. So great, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And we will put it out there to see it. We'll be listening to these back, but the other conversations are coming about. And today, I mean, none of us have met each other today.
No.
First time.
First time I've met.
So there you go. That's the way. I'll comments that we come back. So we're going to feed them like completely feedback over the next few months.
Okay.
And see how it
functions. Yeah, let us know.
Yeah, but you have to go online. It's all going to be part of this seventh wave thing.
Yeah.
So this networking here is going to be part of that.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to start when we publish it, which is going to be in the end of next week, the first ones. We're putting out as like a diary event.
Yeah.
Okay.
So these things are like.
Yeah.
Watch this space then.
Watch this space.
Yeah.
Great. Okay then.
Bye.